In December of 1975, my folks decided to leave the Oklahoma, California area and move to Kingston, Tennessee, which is right outside of Knoxville and right outside of Oak Ridge, Tennessee. You might recognize that city. That's the location of where the National Lab was, involved in the Manhattan Project. My father took a job there as a welder for a bellows manufacturer. When they packed up their stuff, my mom and my dad, and put it into a little makeshift kind of trailer that Dad had welded together and towed it behind the car, they left everything that they'd ever known. Both my mom and dad had really kind of grown up from their, at least their teenage years, in Southern California. My dad was a rough character at that time. Both my folks were hippies. And Dad rode a Harley Davidson. He had hair that was longer than my mother's. It was nearly all the way down his back. And he seldom wore shirts when I remember him as a boy. He most of the time was bare-chested and had kind of a leather vest that had the Harley-Davidson emblem insignia emblazoned across the back, the eagle. And he had a leather cap that he wore, a captain's cap, and it also had the Harley-Davidson insignia across it. It had kind of a bushy beard. And he was just he looked like a fellow that worked in a shipyard, and he was just a rough sort of fellow. Life was not good for he and my mother in Southern California, mostly because of things that they had introduced to their life by their lifestyle and by their friends that they kept and all that sort of thing. So moving themselves and the two youngsters, I was six at the time, my little sister was five, moving 2,000 miles away from Southern California to East Tennessee was a dramatic shift, that dramatic change for them in lifestyle. Dad cut his hair. He started listening to country music, and he sold his motorcycle, and he started working at this little bellows manufacturer called Pathway Bellows, and they started looking for a church. We had never gone to any church much, but it just so happened that Dad worked with a fellow named Bob McLean. Bob and his wife Robbie had just become Christians. They too were from Southern California. Bob also rode a Harley Davidson. And because of those things that they had in common, Bob was able to invite Rodney, my dad, and Suzanne, my mother, to come to church with he and Robbie. And so for the first time as a family, my mom and my dad and my sister and I went to this little church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And it was all a new experience for us. I remember singing songs and reading them out of the songbook and not understanding why you didn't move when you were up looking at the first line of verses to the next line immediately under the first line. I had no concept of reading a sheet of music. That was a brand new experience for us. And there were so many things about that. I didn't have a Bible. And when we went to the Bible class, other kids did, and that was all brand new. I didn't know the story about John the Baptist, and I remember that story the first time that I sat in a Bible class, and the class and the teacher talked about a fellow that ate locusts and wild honey, and that made no sense to me at all. All of that was just brand new. But I'll never forget that for several Thursday nights, two men came out to their house, to our house out in the country, it was 20 miles out of town, and they brought their boys, and we played baseball in the front yard while Mom and Dad sat around the kitchen table and studied with them the Bible. I had never seen my folks sit with an open Bible in the home. But that became a new tradition in our family. And I'll never forget the night when I watched my mom and dad walk hand in hand down the aisle and say to a group of people who just a short time earlier had been strangers that they believed that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and they were baptized into Christ that night. It was an unforgettable moment for me, and it was very life-changing. And obviously, that's had a very dramatic impact, a profound impact on the direction of my life, not only mine, but Jennifer's life. She was introduced to the gospel through our family in her teens. And I say all of that to say that I believe that there are a lot more Rodney and Suzanne Moores out there, and I believe that there are a lot more Bob and Robbie McLeans. who can invite them to come and see. And there are a whole, there are cities of people like that around you and around us, and we need to be inviting them to come and shining our light, because there are folks out there looking and who are making changes the same way my folks did. Maybe they've just moved across the country. Maybe they've just lost a job. Maybe they've got two youngsters at home and that are beginning to make them think soberly about their lifestyle. Maybe they just got a haircut and a new job because they need to clean up their life. Something else. Maybe they just lost each of them a parent the way my folks did. All kinds of things that make them ready to start thinking soberly about life and about what is really important. We need to be sharing with them the kinds of things that we relish and celebrate tonight and that we've been talking about this week. I invite you tonight, if you will, to open to the 16th chapter of Matthew, please. The 16th chapter of Matthew in verse 24. Matthew 16, verse 24. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life shall lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake shall find it. For what will a man be profited if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and will then recompense every man according to his deeds. Truly I say to you, there are some of those who are standing here who shall not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." And Jesus says something really radical to his disciples here, to anyone who would follow him. Any would-be follower of Jesus needs to understand the kind of commitment that Jesus calls for. And that's a commitment that is total. He expresses that very well in the text when he says that if you want to follow me, you need to understand that that requires taking up your cross, whatever that cross is, and follow me. Now, we have to think in our mind the way that the disciples thought when they heard the word cross. They did not think of something that was golden or silver. They did not think of something that was glorious when they thought of a cross. You see, our thinking about cross has been changed by what we understand has happened on the cross in order to secure mankind's redemption, in order to secure pardon. Cross for them was just meant an implement of execution. Cross for them meant like electric chair. Cross for them meant lethal injection. Cross for them meant a noose. Cross for them meant a guillotine. I mean, it was a means of capital punishment in their time. And so their picture of cross was something that was heinous. It was something that was painful. It was a picture that was dreadful. When they thought of cross, they thought of something that was shameful. They thought of people who suffered when they thought of a cross. They thought of insurrection and all kinds of crimes that would be worthy of death. And so when Jesus says that if you want to follow me, you're going to have to take up a cross to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me, you see, he's talking about suffering some pain for his sake. He is saying to them words that speak of some difficulty in the life of a disciple, some shame that might be associated with that, some pain, some disgrace that might come as a consequence of being a follower of his. But he says something in the text here that helps us to comprehend how it is that we would choose such a life. Why would you choose to come and follow Jesus if it's going to mean that there might be some difficulty imposed in your life? That there might be some crises that are introduced all because of your faith in God? And the way that he poses that value that will cause me to have a commitment to him that is total is by asking a question about things, about the real value of things. He asked the question in verse 26, "What will a man be profited if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul?" We just sang that verse. We just sang it in the song, the hymn that we just sung. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Jesus appeals to a kind of comparison that we all begin to understand even when we're very young. the business of profit and loss, about having gain or about having some kind of or about having some kind of loss. We begin to understand that very early when we start to carry lunch money to school or when we start to buy bubble gum in the grocery store. We understand something about the business of profit and loss. If we have a nickel and it costs 10 cents, we just don't have enough. Or if we're bringing home $500 and our bills are $550, then what you've got is a loss. But if you've got more coming in than you do having out, than you do going out, then what you have is a gain. We understand that now on the playground. When we begin to play sports, that it doesn't matter how hard the Sox play the ball game. If the other team gets more points on the board, if they hit more home runs and you have fewer hits, then what you've got is a loss. But if you've got more points on the board than they do, it doesn't matter how hard they play, what you've got is a win. What you've got is a gain. And so Jesus appeals to this notion of profit and loss in order to make it a point to his disciples about the things in the world that have real value and the things in the world that are only trivial or minuscule value, things that are not really important at all. And what he says to us is that if you take the whole world, now you've got to really grasp all that's comprehended by that. If you take everything that's in the world and you put it on one side of a scale, and you take a soul, not all the souls in the world, you just take one soul, and you put it on the other side of the scale, Jesus says that there's no comparison between the two. What shall it profit a man, amen, if he gains the whole world and yet loses soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? The implication in both of those questions is that there is not anything in all of this world. In fact, if you had all of the world together, if you could gain, if you could keep, if you could have all that is in the world, Jesus says that doesn't even begin to compare to the value of your soul. Now that's impressive. That is impressive. And it really has a way of simplifying what life is all about. Jesus says in that statement that the only thing that any one of us has that is of any real value or any real consequence in our life is our soul. You start adding up all of your assets, everything that you have in your bank account. You take the value of your home, you take the value of your possessions, you liquidate all of your assets, you take all of your retirement, you take all of your earning power over the course of your lifetime, or all the earning power of everyone in your household, and you begin to add all of that up, and that's not anything. That is not your significant possession. It doesn't even begin to compare to the value of your soul. You add to your worth, if you were to liquidate all your assets, all of the relationships that you have, everybody that you could call upon that would help you in a time of crisis, anybody who is somebody that might help you, anybody of importance that might come to your assistance or your aid, you take all of your relatives, all of your business associates, all the people that you went to school with at some point in time, all of your neighbors, anybody who has any kind of care for you, any politician that you know that might come to your aid, you take all of those persons and you add them up to your assets. And there isn't any relationship that is more important than the value of your soul. You see, the only thing that you have that's of any real value in your life, the only thing that you have, that you possess really, that's of consequence, is your soul. That's the only thing that really does matter, Jesus says. When you take everything that's in the world and you boil it down, your soul is the only thing that's of any real import or of any real consequence. The way that simplifies life is this. If you have nothing, and if you have nobody when this life is over with, and if you have no relationship, if you have no significance to anyone else, but when this life is over with, you have a soul that's secure, then you have got the essence of life. But if you have everything, I mean, if you have notoriety, if you have wealth, if you have if you had had great experiences in life, and yet in the acquisition of all those things and relationships, of all that fame and importance, but you don't have a soul that's secure, then Jesus says you really don't have anything at all. You've not gained anything in this world. You've really lost at what life is all about. You see, to lose your soul is to lose all that you've got to lose. And to gain everything that's in the world and to lose your soul is to gain nothing at all and lose the only thing, that it really has any real value. And that simplifies life for everybody because it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter where you're born, whether it's in this country or some other country. It doesn't matter who your parents are, who your grandparents are. It doesn't matter what you have or what you don't have. It doesn't matter whether you're king or whether you're a pauper. It doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter what education you have or don't have or what your career has been. That reduces all men in all conditions, of all races, of all stations in life, of all times to equals. It says that life for every single last one of us, the purpose of life is all the same. It is all about what you do with your soul during the course of your many or your few years here. The only thing that you have as a value is your soul. And so to lose your soul is to lose everything, and to lose everything and gain your soul is to lose nothing at all and to keep the only thing worth keeping. That is really profound, it seems to me, to really grasp what the essence of life is all about. And I tell you what else is optimistic about that, is that my soul is the only thing that I really can do anything about. There is no way that I can do enough to protect my possessions. There's not any way that I can do enough to secure my health. There is no way that I can guarantee that the liberties that I have now, today, are going to be here tomorrow. There's no way to be sure that to have security in anything in this life that's of a material nature or even of a relationship nature. There's not anything else in this life that I can make secure, but the one thing that I most need to do something about is the one thing that I can't do something about, and that's my soul. Isn't that great? That the only thing that I really have to worry about is the one thing that I really can do something about. And there's not anything else in this life that can be absolutely secure, but my soul can be. And that's the one thing that God has given me to do something about. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and yet lose his own soul? Our soul is all we've got to gain. It's all that we've got to lose. That's the reason why Jesus can say, if you want to follow me, you need to take up your cross and come after me. You see, the reason why I can have a total commitment to Christ is because that's the only thing that's the only thing worth being totally committed to. The only person worth being totally committed to is Christ, because the only thing that I can really secure in this life is the destiny of my soul. I want to test for just a little while, though, tonight, what Jesus means when he says, "What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world?" I want you to think for a little bit about what is in the whole world. And think about that for a little while in relationship to your soul. I want to ask you to dream for just a little bit. Let's think about just the matter of wealth in the world. And I want you just to dream with me a little bit about wealth. What if you just had unimaginable wealth? What if you had the wealth of Solomon or the wealth of some king that has lived through the ages that was just exorbitant, that was just unparalleled? What if you could have a house or as many houses as you want on Beacon Street down in Boston? What if you could have as many houses as you want there with all the purple windows that you want? What if you could have all that? What if you could own whatever the prime property was there on the Charles River, and you could do with it or you could develop it however you wanted to? What if it was your choice to make those kinds of decisions? What if when you bought and sold stock, it was all written up in the newspaper the next day? It was in the Globe, and it was on CNN, and it was the headlines everywhere because people were watching the kinds of financial decisions that you made, because they knew that stocks and businesses, that they would rise and fall on the basis of the financial decisions that you made. What if not only companies, but even countries came to you because they wanted your financial backing. They knew that they in all kinds of institutions, schools and benevolent societies and charities and hospitals, you had to have people that just answered the telephone when those kinds of calls came in, because they were looking for your help, for your philanthropy. They wanted your assistance with whatever project they had going, because they knew that just your backing would mean that other people would rise to the cause and would come to the aid of you in whatever that effort was. What if your only concern when you went somewhere is trying to figure out where you could park your helicopter or your private jet, or where it is that they would park your limo and come back and pick you up later on? Well, we know, we understand that if we had that kind of wealth, that when we made financial decisions, that the world watched, that the world stopped, that people wanted to hear us when we spoke because they saw in us the picture of success. We know that if you had all of that in the way of this world's wealth, and you lost your soul in the pursuit of it, then really all of those dollar signs would mean nothing at all. All those zeros, it would be of no consequence. Because you would have lost the one thing that was really worth keeping, and you would have kept nothing at all when this life was over with. All of that would have gone to somebody else. All of your kids or your grandkids would have fought over, or some would have been tied up in courts. Now, I tell you what doesn't make any sense in light of all of that. And listen carefully. I tell you what doesn't make sense. We know that if you were exorbitantly wealthy and lost your soul, that you'd have nothing at all. But you know what we'll do? We will work, and we will sweat, and we will wring our hands, and we will go into debt, and we will work overtime, and we will do all kinds of things with regard to the acquisition of wealth, to the neglect of our family, to the neglect of our health, to the neglect of our soul. Not, listen folks, not so that we can have a house on Beacon Street, and not so that we can have purple windows, and not so that we can have a helicopter or a limousine or any of those kinds of things, not so that we can invest all kinds of money in the stock market. We'll do all of that just so we can be middle class. Not so that we can have a big piece of the pie, not so we can even have a whole pie, but just so that we can have a little bitty sliver. We'll do all kinds of things to the neglect of our soul. Now, what sense does that make? We know that if you had it all and you lost your soul, it wouldn't be worthwhile. But somehow I can justify in my mind what little neglect I give to my soul just so that I can have a little bit more. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? Maybe wealth would not be the thing that would lead to the neglect of our soul. Maybe pleasure is the thing that would tempt us. Because that's in the world too. When Jesus says, what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world? He's not just including in that statement or excluding in that statement wealth. That also excludes pleasure. But I want to take out of the, for the sake of argument, I want to take out of the picture entirely any kind of sinful pleasure. I don't even want to talk about indulgences that are wrong in and of themselves. I want us to consider, for the sake of the argument tonight, just pleasures that are right in and of themselves. Let's take our hobbies. I mean, those are pleasures, but they're pleasures that are not wrong in and of themselves. There's nothing wrong with entertainment. There's nothing wrong with leisure type of activity. And so let's, for the sake of argument, just consider, dream a little bit tonight. What is it that you really love to do? I mean, when you have some time, when you have a weekend that's just for you to spend however you choose, see fit, a few hours to while away, what do you really like to do? We've had the opportunity to see some sights around New England the last couple of days, and that's been very enjoyable. And what if you could just travel and just see all that you wanted to see in the world, all the great vistas you could see, all the wonders of the world? You could go to the Grand Canyon, and you could go and see Niagara Falls, and you could go and take an Alaska cruise, and you could go to the Greek Isles, and you could go to Hawaii. And you could just see all the continents and all the wonders that there are to see in the world. What if you could do all of that? Or what if, Jennifer and I love to garden. What if you could just have in your garden, in our garden, all the kinds of varieties of plants that you ever wanted to have? All kinds of tropicals and all kinds of vegetables and all kinds of fruits and all kinds of exotic sorts of rare plants. And you could have a greenhouse, and you could have everything that you needed in terms of the right kind of wisdom to know how to care for them, so that you could provide the right kind of lighting and the right kind of fertilizer and the right kind of watering conditions, and you had all the botanical kinds of wizardry and skill and help that you need, so that you could make it all just as beautiful and glorious as you wanted to. What if you could do that to your heart's content? Or maybe you're a fisherman. And what if you could go and fish if you wanted to out on the Gulf of Mexico, and then you could come up here to Maine and you could do a little fishing, or you could go and do some freshwater fishing up in Canada or someplace, and just fish all the world's great lakes and rivers and oceans just to your heart's content. Maybe shopping is your thing. And what if you could go to all the great shopping malls of the world? And you could go to New York City, and you could come to Boston, and you could go over to the West Coast, and then you could go to some exotic country and shop just wherever you wanted to go. What if you could do that to your heart? Well, we know. We know that if you did all of that to your, even innocent pleasures, even things that are not, there's nothing wrong with fishing, nothing wrong with gardening, nothing wrong with travel, nothing wrong with shopping. But we know even things that are not wrong in and of themselves can be taken to such an extent that they lead to the neglect of other things, so that we never have time to pray. And we never have time to study. And we don't have time even to assemble with the saints, because it gets crowded out with all the other pursuits in life. You can get so involved in trivial pursuits in life that God just gets crowded out of your life. We know that if you did all of that, even things that aren't wrong in and of themselves, and yet you neglected your soul in the pursuit of it, that you would have lost the thing, the only thing worth keeping, and have gained nothing in this world. You'd have all kinds of pleasant memories. You'd have all kinds of great pictures. You'd have all kinds of wonderful experiences and stories to tell. You could say at the end of your life that you've lived a full life because you've been able to do at your leisure the things that you really wanted to do. But you would have lost out on the one thing that was really significant and important and that really gave you contentment. Now, we understand that when we talk about the excess, or what we've pictured as the excess of doing that to the nth degree. But you know what we'll turn around and do? We will plan our fun. I mean, we will make our plans for our vacation. We will mark the dates off on the calendar. We will buy all kinds of brochures, and we'll look at our books, and we'll do all kinds of things. We'll search the web, and we'll get ready for wherever it is that we're fixing to go. But we don't ever talk about heaven. We don't talk about the place where we're going. We don't dream in our mind and try to visualize a picture of where it is that we're headed. We don't look for any kind of brochures or documents or things that tell us about that location. But we don't number our days looking forward to that event. We don't plan our righteousness the way that we plan our fun. There was a bunch of us in Houston a few years ago that were going to go to fishing out on the Gulf of Mexico. And I'd never been fishing on the Gulf before, and I was really looking forward to the trip. And it was a Saturday morning, and we all got up about 3 o'clock in the morning, or some kind of ridiculous time. And we packed our lunches for the day, and we got our ice chest, and we filled them full of Gatorades and waters and things. And we were planning that when we came home, that's where we were going to bring all of our catch of red snapper and ling and dolphin back in. And we loaded it all in the truck, and all six of us got in the truck, and we drove 2 hours all the way down to Freeport. We were taking Dramamine so that we wouldn't get sick when we got out on the water, and we had bug spray so that because the mosquitoes are really bad down on the coast. And so we drove 2 hours down to Freeport when we knew that the weatherman was saying that day that it was going to be 6-foot seas out on the Gulf, and that if it were 6-foot seas, the captain was going to tell us to go home. But we drove 2 hours to Freeport anyway, just knowing that when we got there, it was going to be okay and we could go fishing. Well, we got to Freeport, and the captain was there at the dock, and he said, "Fellas, I told you all not to bother coming down here because it's 6-foot seas, and you can look out there and see there's no way we're going out." Well, we all stood there at the dock, slapping the mosquitoes, woozy over all the Dramamine we've been taking, and just standing there for 30 minutes thinking that if we stood there long enough and sat there and wished hard enough that some way the water would just kind of calm out and we'd get to go fishing anyway. It didn't happen. So we all got back in the pickup truck and we drove 2 hours back to Houston trying to stay awake. And went to bed when we got home. The Saturday was blown. And I didn't catch a thing. But if you'd asked any one of those fellows the next Saturday, we all would have been ready to get back in the pickup truck, get back up at 3 o'clock in the morning, drive all the way down to Freeport with the same kind of weather report and do the thing all over again. It is amazing to me what we will do for the sake of something that we really want to do, for the sake of something that is fun. I mean, we will go in debt. We will go without sleep. We will drive all night. Folks sleep on the sidewalk just for some kind of sporting event or just to get tickets to see somebody sing on a stage. We will tolerate uncomfortable seating and inclement weather and even risk life and limb all for the sake of having a little fun. But when it comes to giving up something for the Lord, when it comes to some discomfort for Him, then sometimes that challenges people's faith. And God sees the difference in terms of what I really value in my life and whether I really value my fun and my pleasure or whether I really value Him. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Maybe it would not be wealth and maybe it wouldn't be pleasure. But maybe it would be reputation that could be the thing that troubles me. When you went to the restaurant tonight, if you were to go downtown and go someplace nice with your wife, or someplace all by yourself with some friends, I guess you wouldn't be all by yourself if you were friends, but all by yourself or with friends. And when you walked into the restaurant, everyone started to whisper because they immediately recognized you when you came into the place. They might even look on the wall over there and see that you'd been there before. And so the restaurant owner had asked you to sign autographed pictures so that he could put it behind a piece of glass up on the wall so that people would know that this is the place that you frequent, that you eat. And that just your picture there adds some status and some importance to the place. What if when you went out to the ball field and you saw the boys playing baseball, or when they were playing football, or when they were playing basketball out on the court, you saw two or three boys and they had your jersey on, your number and your name across the back. Because if you were to call any one of those boys aside, they could quote all of your stats. They could talk about your batting average. They could talk about your pitching. They could talk about the big game, the last big game, or the last series that you won. If they knew everything about you. What if when you the little girls had on their shelf of DVDs every movie that you'd ever made. And they could quote your lines. I mean, they could recite by heart what it is that you said that was so meaningful or so moving or so funny. What if it was the case when your face showed up on the television screen? That they didn't have to put any sort of little caption there identifying who you were because folks immediately knew who you were. Your face, your visage was a household item so that everybody knew who you were. Everybody knows your name. Well, we all know and have heard lots and lots and lots of stories of people who have fame and yet who don't have happiness. We've heard so many tales and have seen so many stories of people who have reputation but whose marriages are in disarray, whose families are in disarray, who have notoriety not because they've done anything of significance, but just because they've done something of tabloid importance, something sensational that attracts the media's attention. And people who have unhappy lives because they just don't have any purpose in life. You can be very, very famous and yet be a person who is so unhappy. And yet even worse than that, in the pursuit of fame, or just because fame finds you when you're too young or when you're too naive or when you're not ready, you can inherit a world of trouble and have everybody know you but not know God, and so not have a soul that's secure. Now, what boggles my mind in view of the passage tonight is this. We understand that you can have all kinds of fame and all kinds of notoriety and be very famous and neglect your soul. But you know what I can turn around and do? Just so that I can look important to a few small minds, not for years and not for months, not even for weeks, but just for 5 minutes. I might say something bad about somebody else, something that trashes somebody's name, something that casts something disparaging on somebody else's reputation, not so that I can be world famous, but just so that for 5 minutes, maybe half a dozen people think that I'm somebody important because I know some little piece of gossip about somebody else. Or maybe I tell some kind of joke that is filthy, something that gets a little bit of laugh, and for 30 seconds I have just a little bit of glory among a few people whose thoughts about me don't really matter at all. And I will do all of that and forfeit my soul just for the sake of just getting a laugh, or just getting a little praise, or just looking a little better than somebody else, or just making somebody else look a little small in somebody else's eyes, and I will forget completely about my reputation with God, all for the sake of just having a little bit of reputation with men. But a reputation that takes me nowhere, and that does me no good. It is amazing what we will do, all for the sake, we wouldn't even call that fame, but for the sake of a little bit of feeling of importance, a little bit of notoriety. We will make tremendous compromises. And what value is that? What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? You put it whatever you want in the scale. Wealth, put pleasure, put fame, put love there. How many stories do we know of people who fell in love with the wrong person? Somebody they love more than God? Who led them away from the things that were good for the soul? And is even a lifetime of happiness worth the forever separation from God? Is it worth that? You see, what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? I know a man who had a good wife who loved him dearly, who had 4 children, who thought he hung the moon. He had a good job. He was a Christian. He drank a little when he was young. He quit drinking when he became a Christian. But he got promoted in the job where he worked, from working with his tools and working with his hands to working in the office as an executive. And he started entertaining some guests that came to see the factory. And that kind of clientele and that kind of atmosphere was just not good for his soul. He couldn't sit at a table and have a meal where others were drinking and not take a drink himself. And one night he did. And when he started, he couldn't stop. It hurt his family because that was the beginning of a downward spiral for him. It was impacting his job. It impacted his family. He left the Lord. Eventually, he left his wife. He left his kids. Does that happen to smart men? I'm here to say to you, it happens to smart men. Does that happen to men who have been good men? It happens to men who've been good men. Does it happen to men who have good families? It happens to men who have good families. Does it happen to men who have good marriages? Yes, sir, it does. It happens to people that somewhere along the way lose their way, who somewhere along the way begin to choose things that are not good for them, who somewhere along the way takes little steps that lead them away from the Lord and little steps that cause them to make little compromises, then end up having a devastating effect on their soul. It happens, folks. Do you know where that man lives now? You won't believe it. Do you know where he lives now? He's homeless. Sometimes he sleeps at night on a cardboard box on a street corner. Sometimes he sleeps in the bench seat of an old pickup truck. Sometimes he shacks up with someone that's not his wife. Sometimes he sleeps in some kind of shelter somewhere. His address now is out behind some Home Depot. That story hurts my feelings because that man's my dad. But it breaks my heart because he's losing his soul and he don't even care. He doesn't care about that. He doesn't think about his soul. Now, please don't misunderstand the story. Because it wouldn't matter, you see, if he still had the executive job. It wouldn't matter if he was still home with Mom. It wouldn't matter if he'd been able to hold it all together and be able to drink a little bit and be all right and keep his job. It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter if he had everything in the world and if he had everything in the way of finances. And if he had all that he was ever dreamed of in the way of reputation and influence in the workplace, everything that he dreamed that he would have someday, because now he had inherited an executive lifestyle, it wouldn't matter if he had all of that and he neglected his soul, he'd be in the same shape that he's in now. So please don't miss the point. It is awfully easy for me to be deceived in whatever my world is. And thinking that because everything is together in terms of my lifestyle and in terms of my dream for this world and where I am, that means that everything's okay with me and God, and that's not necessarily so. It takes a real priority on our part to really think about where we are in relation to God, to really make sure that we're really taking care of first things first. I preach the gospel, brothers and sisters, because I'm tired of losing the people that I love to the devil. I'm so tired of that. I'm tired of watching people that I really care for make choices in their life that settle for things that are here and things that are trivial and that don't see that God has prepared for us something so much better than this. I'm tired of people that I love loving things that are here and loving pleasure and loving things and and loving just whatever they can find today, and not seeing that the one thing that they can really do something about is the one thing that they're doing nothing about, and that's the care of their soul. Don't let that happen to you. And I'm here to say that it can. Because I've seen it happen to too many folks, and you have too. What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? Your soul is the thing in your life. It's the only thing that matters. It's the only thing worth keeping. It's the one thing that you possess, the only thing that you could possess that you can do something about. You can't buy enough insurance. You can't take out a policy that's big enough to protect your wealth, to protect your reputation, to protect your health. You can't do anything to make sure that the stock market's always going to be where you want it to be. You can't do anything to secure anything else in your life, but the one thing that you can do something about is the one thing you really need to do something about, and that's about the security of your soul. Won't you do something about that tonight? And won't you make the commitment in your life to really value the thing that is of real value, and that's your soul? If you're not a Christian tonight, won't you repent of your sins? Won't you confess Jesus as your Savior and Lord? Won't you be baptized for the remission of your sins? Won't you take up your cross and follow Him? Because what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? Won't you make your soul secure tonight? Won't you come if we can help you as we stand and sing?